Side 3.
And now someone produced a phonograph and put a record on the turntable. I listened with pleasure, but experienced nothing comparable to my seen apocalypses of flowers or flannel. Would a naturally gifted musician hear the revelations which for me had been exclusively visual? It would be interesting to make the experiment. Meanwhile, though not transfigured, though retaining its normal quality and intensity, the music contributed not a little to my understanding of what had happened to me and of the wider problems which those happenings had raised. Instrumental music, oddly enough, left me rather cold. Mozart's C minor piano concerto was interrupted after the first movement, and a recording of some madrigals by Gesualdo took its place. These voices, I said appreciatively, these voices, they're a kind of bridge back to the human world. And a bridge they remained even while singing the most startlingly chromatic of the Mad Prince's compositions. Through the uneven phrases of the madrigals, the music pursued its course, never sticking to the same key for two bars together. In Gesualdo, that fantastic character out of a Webster melodrama, psychological disintegration had exaggerated, had pushed to the extreme limit, a tendency inherent in modal as opposed to fully tonal music. The resulting work sounded as though they might have been written by the later Schoenberg. And yet, I felt myself constrained to say, as I listened to these strange products of a counter-reformation psychosis working upon a late medieval art form, and yet it does not matter that he's all in bits. The whole is disorganized, but each individual fragment is in order, is a representative of a higher order. The highest order prevails even in the disintegration. The totality is present even in the broken pieces, more clearly present, perhaps, than in a completely coherent work. At least you aren't lulled into a sense of false security by some merely human, merely fabricated order. You have to rely on your immediate perception of the ultimate order. So in a certain sense, disintegration may have its advantages. But of course it's dangerous, horribly dangerous. Suppose you couldn't get back out of the chaos. From Gesualdo's madrigals we jumped across a gulf of three centuries to Alban Berg and the lyric suite. This, I announced in advance, is going to be hell. But as it turned out, I was wrong. Actually, the music sounded rather funny. Dredged up from the personal subconscious, agony succeeded 12-tone agony. But what struck me was only the essential incongruity between a psychological disintegration even completer than Gesualdo's and the prodigious resources in talent and technique employed in its expression. "Isn't he sorry for himself?" I commented with a derisive lack of sympathy. And then, Katzenmusik, learned Katzenmusik. And finally, after a few more minutes of the anguish, who cares what his feelings are? Why can't he pay attention to something else? As a criticism of what is undoubtedly a very remarkable work, it was unfair and inadequate, but not, I think, irrelevant. I cite it for what it is worth, and because that is how, in a state of pure contemplation, I reacted to the lyric suite. When it was over, the investigator suggested a walk in the garden. I was willing, and though my body seemed to have dissociated itself almost completely from my mind, or, to be more accurate, though my awareness of the transfigured outer world was no longer accompanied by an awareness of my physical organism, I found myself able to get up, open the French window, and walk out with only a minimum of hesitation. It was odd, of course, to feel that I was not the same as these arms and legs out there, as this wholly objective trunk and neck and even head. It was odd, but one soon got used to it. And anyhow, the body seemed perfectly well able to look after itself. In reality, of course, it always does look after itself. All that the conscious ego can do is to formulate wishes, which are then carried out by forces which it controls very little and understands not at all. When it does anything more, when it tries too hard, for example, when it worries, when it becomes apprehensive about the future, it lowers the effectiveness of those forces and may even cause the devitalized body to fall ill. In my present state, awareness was not referred to as ego. It was, so to speak, on its own. This meant that the physiological intelligence controlling the body was also on its own. For the moment, that interfering neurotic, who in waking hours tries to run the show, was blessedly out of the way. From the French window, I walked out under a kind of pergola covered in part by a climbing rose tree, in part by laths 1 inch wide with 1/2 inch of space between them. The sun was shining, and the shadows of the laths made a zebra-like pattern on the ground and across the seat and back of a garden chair, which was standing at this end of the pergola. That chair, shall I ever forget it? Where the shadows fell on the canvas upholstery, stripes of a deep but glowing indigo alternated with stripes of an incandescence so intensely bright that it was hard to believe that they could be made of anything but blue fire. For what seemed an immensely long time, I gazed without knowing, even without wishing to know, what it was that confronted me. At any other time, I would have seen a chair barred with alternate light and shade. Today, the percept had swallowed up the concept. I was so completely absorbed in looking, so thunderstruck by what I actually saw, that I could not be aware of anything else. Garden furniture, laths, sunlight, shadow, these were no more than names and notions, mere verbalizations, for utilitarian or scientific purposes after the event. The event was this succession of azure furnace doors separated by gulfs of unfathomable gentian. It was inexpressibly wonderful, wonderful to the point almost of being terrifying. And suddenly I had an inkling of what it must feel like to be mad. Schizophrenia has its heavens as well as its hells and purgatories. I remember what an old friend, dead these many years, told me about his mad wife. One day, in the early stages of the disease, when she still had her lucid intervals, he had gone to talk to her about their children. She listened for a time, then cut him short. How could he bear to waste his time on a couple of absent children when all that really mattered, here and now, was the unspeakable beauty of the patterns he made in this brown tweed jacket every time he moved his arms? Alas, this paradise of cleansed perception, of pure one-sided contemplation, was not to endure. The blissful intermissions became rarer, became briefer, until finally there were no more of them. There was only horror. Most takers of mescaline experience only the heavenly part of schizophrenia. The drug brings hell and purgatory only to those who have had a recent case of jaundice, or who suffer from periodical depressions or a chronic anxiety. If, like the other drugs of remotely comparable power, mescaline were notoriously toxic, the taking of it would be enough of itself to cause anxiety. But the reasonably healthy person knows in advance that so far as he is concerned, mescaline is completely innocuous, that its effects will pass off after 8 or 10 hours, leaving no hangover and consequently no craving for a renewal of the dose. Fortified by this knowledge, he embarks upon the experiment without fear, in other words, without any disposition to convert an unprecedentedly strange and other than human experience into something appalling, something actually diabolical. Confronted by a chair which looked like the Last Judgment, or to be more accurate, by a Last Judgment which after a long time and with considerable difficulty I recognized as a chair, I found myself all at once on the brink of panic. This, I suddenly felt, was going too far. Too far, even though the going was into intenser beauty, deeper significance. The fear, as I analyze it in retrospect, was of being overwhelmed, of disintegrating under a pressure of reality greater than a mind accustomed to living most of the time in a cozy world of symbols could possibly bear. The literature of religious experience abounds in references to the pains and terrors overwhelming those who have come too suddenly face to face with some manifestation of the mysterium tremendum. In theological language, this fear is due to the incompatibility between man's egotism and the divine purity, between man's self-aggravated separateness and the infinity of God. Following Boehmer and William Law, we may say that by unregenerate souls, the divine light at its full blaze can be apprehended only as a burning, purgatorial fire. An almost identical doctrine is to be found in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where the departed soul is described as shrinking in agony from the pure light of the void, and even from the lesser, tempered lights, in order to rush headlong into the comforting darkness of selfhood as a reborn human being, or even as a beast, an unhappy ghost, a denizen of hell. Anything rather than the burning brightness of unmitigated reality. Anything. The schizophrenic is a soul not merely unregenerate, but desperately sick into the bargain. His sickness consists in the inability to take refuge from inner and outer reality, as the sane person habitually does, in the homemade universe of common sense, the strictly human world of useful notions, shared symbols, and socially acceptable conventions. The schizophrenic is like a man permanently under the influence of mescaline, and therefore unable to shut off the experience of a reality which he is not holy enough to live with, which he cannot explain away because it is the most stubborn of primary facts, and which, because it never permits him to look at the world with merely human eyes, scares him into interpreting its unremitting strangeness, its burning intensity of significance, as the manifestations of human or even cosmic malevolence, calling for the most desperate countermeasures, from murderous violence at one end of the scale to catatonia or psychological suicide at the other. And once embarked upon the downward, the infernal road, one would never be able to stop. That now was only too obvious. If you started in the wrong way, I said in answer to the investigator's questions, everything that happened would be a proof of the conspiracy against you. It would all be self-validating. You couldn't draw a breath without knowing it was part of the plot. So you think you know.